I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek, the show, the thing. Welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars Geeks of the World and you, to keep you current on the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, and the guy with the mallet, the gavel, is Tom Merritt. It's not a mallet.
It's been upgraded. It's a mallet.
Are you tenderizing meat over there? Is that what's going on?
Okay. Tenderizing my hand.
Wonderful.
No, I try to hit on proceedings, because that seems like a very judicial word. Proceedings.
Yeah, I like it.
Of the All-Star.
Yeah, I feel like we're a real bad episode of some procedural. So nicely.
Right. Current Geek is a procedural. if people haven't noticed.
It kind of is. We need more slow motion shots of bullets transferring through people's bodies. Speaking of bodies and bullets, let's get to our guests. We have some fantastic guests today. I'd like to welcome to the program the person who first told me that Current Geek's intro sounded like I was yelling carrot cake. It's Mr. Mark Spagnuolo, the wood whisperer himself. Hello, man.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
I'm good. It's good to have you here. Also, thanks. Part of nice Comic Dorks, here. I should mention that.
When we decide to do a show.
Yeah, we don't do it very often, but when we do it, oh, man.
Oh, boy, does it hurt.
It's something special. also with us, the one, the only, the internet's own, Mike Schramm. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
I am live on location in my office here at EDAR.
That's right.
You guys all get to do this from the safety and security of your own home, and I am at work right now, so...
This is true, but you're.
I like this theme. I don't know about the carrot cake, but I like this theme of. It sounds like the music that you're playing sounds like an art executive is like, we can't afford Pink Panther, but
this will be close enough.
Yeah. Let's put it in something that sounds kind of like it.
Yeah.
So
one of those royalty free music discs you can buy.
Yeah.
Minx.
Totally.
Sounds good.
That's exactly it.
It's gone now, but it sounded good when you were playing it.
Well, it was here for a minute. Hey, we're back, everybody, and it's time to do a show. We got a big bunch of stuff to talk about today, and we'll start with the stuff at the top.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed...
one. How about this one?
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Take it away, Tom.
So, if you're an Office 365 subscriber... You can now edit Word, Excel, and PowerPoint in their own little iPad apps. And if you're not a subscriber, you could still use those apps to view docs.
Yeah, that worked really well for Google Docs for a while, where you could only view them, and that was kind of worthless and useless. But
yeah, it worked really well. Like, I never used it.
Sure. I mean, there are still a lot of Office users, right? How many here use Office for things?
Not me.
How about you, Mike?
I'm in the office, and I do use Office for things.
But
I would never do it for iPad, which is the thing that I've heard most people talking about this week. Like, I guess it's cool that there's Office on the iPad, but when I have my iPad, it's usually when I do not want to think about the office at all. So,
right.
I mean, we've got a couple, real techie guys here and people who work on their devices. Now, is that a device that you even think about work on typically, or is it all play?
Pretty rarely.
See, I don't, but I know lots of people who do.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't been able to get over the form factor, and I don't feel like I can actually get real work done on an iPad, so I need my laptop. This is something that viewing docs, fine. I don't think I can really get work done, so editing docs is probably not going to happen on that device for me.
Yeah.
Although there's a couple of things I can see. One is I've got a Word doc that I'm working on, and I think of something I want to add to it, and all I've got with me is my iPad. Well, now, because it's connected to OneDrive, I can open as long as I'm storing my thing in OneDrive. Right. I can open it up. I can do a quick edit on the iPad, right? And that's great. Because when Google Docs went that way, like Scott was saying, I got really excited. I'm like, now finally I can actually edit docs. But I don't use Google Docs on my iPad all that often.
Sure.
It just comes in handy sometimes.
That Drive app's okay. It works okay. Yeah. It's not great, but
actually they did a really good job on the Word and Excel docs. I haven't played around with the PowerPoint ones, but they work really well on the tablet form.
Yeah.
I was going to say PowerPoint is the one that I think would be most productive. Like, no one wants to, maybe if you have to view a Word doc or view an Excel spreadsheet, but like PowerPoint is actually, and there are a bunch of apps that already will let you present from the iPad. I've actually done presentation from the iPad.
Sure.
But PowerPoint seems like the one that would be most useful because you go on a business trip and you have to present something, you plug the iPad in, and then you go home. Like, so I don't know.
Yeah. Is Keynote and all that stuff free? I can't remember. I think it went free.
I think it is, isn't it? It's free if you bought your iPad after some month in 2013 that I can't remember.
Okay.
So it's $9.99 if you're using an older iPad.
Yeah, and I would argue that it's a pretty strong app, that Keynote app. So for me, it would be like, well, that's not enough for me to subscribe to Office 365, but some of these other things, maybe if, again, you had that office environment where you're using Office, but since I don't anyway, and since if I'm going to do any kind of like productivity on my iPad, it's usually going to be like, I need to make a list tonight. I need show notes for this thing. I'm interviewing a guy tomorrow. So I'm just jot some ideas down while I'm watching TV. And I can do that in anything, you know, any old app will do. So yeah,
I actually use, I have my app right here. I can show it to you guys. It's called a pad of paper and a pen.
Oh, what? Who? Look at you, old school.
Jeez. This is all my document
resolution on that.
Yeah, all my document work for me. I can just swipe right on it. Yeah. The thing is, sometimes the memory fills up. The battery life is infinite. Yeah. The memory will occasionally fill up, and I have to go to CVS and get another one. But other than that, it's terrific.
That's pretty fancy. Tom, where was this announced? Was this on stage? What was the deal?
Oh, yeah. Satya Nadella, the new CEO of Microsoft, had a press conference in San Francisco where he announced this. And they've got their Build Developers Conference coming up. So he's like, stay tuned. We've got all kinds of great Microsoft announcements, but it's kind of a setting the tone for the new Microsoft where they're not hoarding everything in the world of Microsoft. Yeah. They're actually launching something on a tablet for an opponent's operating system, in this case, iOS first, before they're actually launching the tablet versions of Microsoft Office for the Microsoft Surface.
I think
that's interesting.
I do too. I think so too. And I think it's good that they are actually not sitting around pretending other people aren't around and acting like there's an ecosystem that they're the only one and nobody else is doing anything. I think that's a good move. But when are they going to let me print food, Tom? When is the food printing coming?
I don't know when Microsoft's going to let you print food, but Foodini will let you print food as early as October if you're willing to pony up for it. The Foodini 3D printer, yeah, it's kind of spelled like Houdini, helps prep your food by doing things like printing out ravioli pre-filled with the meat. Like, it doesn't actually cook the food or anything,
right?
But it prints out stuff for you. If it has the right texture, it does have to be the right texture. So like, you're doing something with chickpeas, you got to blend it at the right consistency. But then you can put it in the capsules. They're open. You can put whatever food you want in them. Natural Machines is the name of the company doing this. They have a Kickstarter to raise $100,000 to get the device to market. If you're an early bird backer, if those are still left, you can pay $999 for a machine. After the early bird ones are all gone, it goes up to $1,200. Shipping in January 2015, unless you pledge at the $2,000 level, then you get your Foodini in October. And in other 3D printing news, Scott, doctors at the University Medical Center at Utrecht University replaced a patient's skull with a 3D printed skull. So that happened.
Oh, that's cool.
That's totally cool. Finally, something you can, it's not just like little miniatures to make a chess set out of. You're actually saving a life here.
This food thing, the food thing is so cool and so dumb at the same time. Like, does this really, do you guys ever see this as having a practical application in a home kitchen?
This early? No. But
I mean, everything has to be pureed. So great. My infant child is going to be really excited about this.
Yeah.
Because now I could take pureed peas and make them in funny shapes, and very consistent, right, organized shapes on a piece of wax paper.
Sure.
But ultimately, I'm like, you know, okay, I can do homemade pasta, but you know what? For me, if I can just get a frozen thing of ravioli and put it in hot water, that's a win in the first place. I don't need to go all the way to the point of homemade pasta.
That's because you are entering old man stage where this stuff seems crazy because you're like, what? I'm not going to put my paper in a printer. I'm going to write it down. Like, this is that stage for this stuff. It's early.
Right. It's not far enough. If I could push the button and get the, you know, like the Back to the Future 2 pizza machine, sure, the hydrator,
sure,
if I could do that and it does it and cooks it and it's done, but to me, this doesn't do enough of the process. And that's my problem.
It's a stepping stone. Mike, what do you think?
I resemble that old man to Mark. I'm writing that down right now, actually. What I really want is a food cooking robot. Like, I don't want something that will squeeze out like pieces of junk for me to eat. I want a robot to like make real homemade lasagna and pound out the chicken. And what I really want here is a robot. So if we can figure that out.
The fact that you have to puree it and get it into that consistency kind of screws it up, because there are just some things that don't go so well that way. Like, how about meat? I don't want my meat pureed.
You don't want pureed
meat.
No,
but I think it'll do ground beef.
Oh, will it? Keep it kind of ground and lumpy?
Because they talked about hamburgers being one of the things.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, that's not so bad.
The consistency doesn't have to. I mean, I know we use chickpeas as an example here. It sounds like there's a range of consistency. It's just that you have to. You couldn't just put the raw chickpeas in there and express it.
Can I get a chess set made out of hamburger? Because that would be ideally what I'm looking for.
That's a good idea.
Eat the pieces that kind of makes
you, like if you capture a piece, you get to eat it.
Yeah. That pawn goes, that's too bad.
Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah. Except you got to bring them back, though, right? If you go down to the other end of the thing, that rule. Oh.
Cheese bishop.
Yeah, that's not good. Cheese bishop. That's pretty good. But not as good as, okay, I want my replicator to poop out a cereal for my Saturday morning cartoon viewing. I'm trying to make a good transition here, Tom. I don't know.
So you're ready to go to the next story.
Yeah, you want to do that one? Go ahead.
How about this? The Carnegie Hall YouTube account. Does that make you yawn? Not after you hear this. Ensemble ACJW posted a video to the official Carnegie Hall YouTube account of them performing a medley of 43 different cartoon theme songs, all in 4 minutes and 30 seconds.
Goodness. Did you see any of your favorites in there?
Oh, the best part is they make a big deal out of, we've put the answers to what these are in the notes, but don't look.
Yeah.
Listen and see how many you can identify. And they even give you little hints because they put some animation in the video of like hats from the characters in the show on the musicians. It's just a really cool thing to listen to.
I'll play a taste of it. Let's just test our folks here, our guests. Right.
Name that cartoon.
Yeah, here we go.
Pokemon.
Very good. Nicely done. That was definitely Pokemon. Yeah. All right, here's another one.
Too old for that one.
I don't know what that was. Oh, well, this one's good.
G.I. Joe.
Very good. G.I. Joe. Oh, this is great. And the best part is these weird overlays.
Those little partial animations.
That stuff's great. All right. Very nice.
It's very cool.
All right.
And you can get the time codes if you do show more in the YouTube video description. They'll tell you exactly what songs they're playing at what points. Really, really kind of fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Almost as fun as cyber athletes. And that's going to happen. The Cybathlon, an Olympics for bionic athletes, will take place in Switzerland in October 2016, hosted by the Swiss National Competence Center of Research, trying to raise awareness for this kind of research. Some of the events, an avatar controlled by a brain interface race, exoskeleton events, and when you win an event, there are two medals, one for the athlete or who they're calling a pilot, in this case, and one for the company who made the device that was used.
Interesting. So, I mean, obviously we're getting a lot better with prosthetics and, stuff that helps people who've had amputations or whatever. It seems like this could be an interesting way to have. So here's the deal with like regular Olympics and straight up sports. For most of the time, if it's a detectable substance somebody's abusing to improve their performance, they're out of the competition. This seems like an opportunity where, I'm not talking about drugs here. I'm talking about like better equipment, better legs, better arms. As those things get developed, we'll give certain people an advantage and other people try to compete to get those advantages. They don't outlaw it. They make it just part of the competition. Best robot leg wins. That's really interesting to me. You know,
now is this primarily like assisted devices to people who are otherwise healthy, or is it simply to help people who actually need these prosthetics and assisted devices?
The research is to help people who need the prosthetics and assisted devices, but anybody can take place in the Cybathlon. Because they want to get really good competitors.
It's kind of a cool way if you think about it, because normally with something like this with prosthetics, initially the goal is let's just get this person to be able to walk. But in this context, it's like, no, let's not just let them walk. Let's let them actually be competitive. Let's do something even more amazing with this.
And there are certain prosthetics that aren't allowed in the Paralympics. Many are, but some aren't. And so they're trying to give people who use those kind of prosthetics a place to compete as well. It's another side effect.
Mike, what's your favorite? What's your favorite event, man? What are you rooting for at the Cyber Athlete Olympics thing?
Oh, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, of course.
But Rock'em Sock'em Cyborgs, you mean?
Yes. But it's interesting because this is really only like a competition right now because it's really hard to do this stuff right now. But I feel like eventually it's almost like motor racing where we're really good at building cars, so they have to have limits on how, you know, what the cars can be and how they can do. So, or what they can do. So, like, it's really interesting. Like, the better robotics gets, the better this cyborg type stuff gets, it'll just become unlimited. Like, you'll just be able to run as fast as you want to or jump as fast as you need to. So,
right.
It's interesting that, like, this is kind of like landing at exactly, not at exactly the right time, but like, this is only something you can necessarily do up until the cyborgs become too good, and then, you know, yeah. There's really no competition. Then there won't be any humans at all.
Right.
But then it'll be like Formula One racing, right? They'll be like
right.
Formula
Eventually they'll
One
have to
cyber
say,
athletes.
Yeah, yeah. They'll have to say, look, your robot can only have 5 pistons in it and 3 cyborg chips.
Yeah.
So
that's
is this
why
like
I'm
the
a fan of NASBot.
Right.
Right. Hey, oh.
This rules make more sense.
3D printed brains.
NASBot.
Yeah.
Is this the first step toward like mech warrior type battles?
I hope so. Don't you?
You know, this has to be where it starts, right?
Yeah.
You know, this is happening already, right? Like they already have mech suits.
Yeah, sort of. But what
I don't
want
to get too conspiracy theory on you guys, but there are mech suits running around the Earth right now.
Government, where, Shram?
Real
where?
Government Cheyenne's had these things for decades.
Where's the proof, Shram?
Yeah, and I want the big, I want mech warrior style, like
that's
three guys fitting them. I don't want Pacific Rim style. That's too big. I want like
kaiju for you.
Three story.
Have you ever heard of a little competition called Titanfall?
Yes, I have. And those kind of robots, that'd be great. We'll see that happen.
Based on reality.
Yeah. Shram's really bringing the conspiracies. I like that.
So listen, guys. You don't understand. The Titanfall initiative is real.
Yeah. You know, nobody will believe me.
What can you tell us about mutated turtles, Tom?
I was just about to go there. The documentary that Mike has been waiting for.
I was
going
to say, Scott, you are really good at predicting the future so far in this podcast because every time you have a question about what Tom is going to talk about next, he immediately
has an answer. I know.
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
It's that chemistry, man, that one mind that
right,
we share.
Right.
Unbelievable. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, there's a trailer out for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's a lot of Megan Fox in this trailer, but you get a look at the turtles for the first time. Did you guys watch it?
Yeah, yes. I did a couple of times.
Who said, oh, you guys are all three married. What's wrong with Megan Fox?
No,
there's nothing wrong with Megan Fox.
She's fine.
It's just Megan Fox is April O'Neil. That bugs me.
Yeah. Mm. Here's what we're dealing with. We're all fans of one kind or another of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I have a feeling that Mark over here kind of grew up on the stuff. Like this was part of your childhood routine.
Yeah.
And because of that, you've got some high expectations. That's understandable.
It's one of those properties that I'll consume in any form. I love it. It's corny, and I still watch the original movies as bad as most of those were.
Sure.
But this is just one of those things. I don't like the April O'Neil choice. She, to me, is the girl next door type, and that's not who Megan Fox is.
No. Well, you wish, but no. Yeah.
Right, and at least not my next door neighbor. And yeah, and in this case, I don't know. What do you guys think about the turtles themselves? There's a little too much of like the glass-eyed Gollum look to them from this preview that disturbed the hell out of me.
I saw that Gollum, especially in the who's the one that took its mask off?
Is it Donatello?
Michelangelo?
Here, I'm going to play a part of it here. That's right.
He's
at the
party
end.
One.
There he is. She says, take off the mask.
No. Whoa, chill. It's just a mask. See? Don't freak out.
Yeah, right? He looks like Gollum.
Yeah, that's
it's like Gollum turtle.
That's really
good. Those eyeballs are just disturbing to me.
I have an interesting opinion on this because I am not like a huge Ninja Turtles fan, but I was when I was a kid. Like Batman, I love all the time.
Of course.
But turtles, like I liked it when I was a kid and I kind of wandered away from it. And this trailer actually worked for me. Like I saw Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo. I was like, oh, these are the turtles that I grew up with. So even though he does look super weird and they do look creepy, I was still like, oh yeah, the turtles. Like I kind of got back into it.
Yeah,
but my biggest issue with the trailer is that the best scene that they could come up with to like tease you into the action in this movie is Donatello being like tossed into a Hummer. Like I just thought that it was such a boring action scene. Like, there's nothing happening. It's just him being tossed shell first into a Hummer. It's like, who cares?
Honestly, I get the feeling they're not far enough along to show us much else.
I think
there's a lot of post-production going on. These are not live-action turtles. These are CGI dudes with mocap. And I'm fine with that as in terms of, you know, I don't want suits again. Suits were terrible. It's because it's the best we had in the 80s and 90s. But now we got a chance to do this right. I'm not all that concerned about it. This isn't Michael Bay directing. He's in production mode here. So people can quit worrying about that. I think it's going to be fine. Mark's concerns are well-founded, and I get this way about stuff I had specific connections to when I was growing up. But for some reason, I'm kind of with Shram here. It's not putting me off. There's something here that's going to work for me, and I don't.
Well, and I can say that the sort of I've never really seen the turtles designed this way, where they're sort of hulking, muscular, massive, and what's implied. I don't know where the story's going or how the origin story is going to change, but it seems like they are consciously designed for something in this particular story that they're creating.
And they're tall, man.
Woo. And they're huge. And it's like that's intriguing. I mean, it's very different than anything I've ever read turtles wise, but I'm interested to see where they take it.
Yeah.
They're being genetically bred for soup.
Sweet. Turtle soup. Awesome. Yeah.
Delicious.
The question
I do think
is,
it's interesting. That, go ahead.
No. I was just curious if you're going to see it in 4DX.
No.
You guys, really?
No, I don't want to see
it in 4DX. No, you haven't heard about
You know what? I've heard of it, but you know what? You're going to have to play Tom Merritt here and explain it a little bit, because what am I supposed to like about all this 4DX?
Wait, 40X, is that 40 times? Is that the amount you pay to see it at the movie
theater?
For the
letter D.
Okay.
In LA, yes, it will be 40X.
Warhammer 40K is what we're talking about.
Anyway. Actually, Mike P. Kennedy submitted this on our Current Geek subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. It's a Korean company called CJ Group that are bringing 4DX movies to the Regal Cinemas LA Live Stadium 14 in downtown Los Angeles this summer. 4DX augments 3D movies with wind, light, fog, and water, as well as scent effects.
It's smell-o-vision.
So it's California Adventures is what it is.
Exactly. although they already have these in Japan, Taiwan, Bulgaria, Colombia, and South Korea.
Wow.
So we're late to the party here.
Aren't we always now, though? People get the cool stuff before us now all the time. Premieres are in Australia before they come here. So Mike Tram, you live there in L.A. Tom, you live in L.A. You guys going to hook up and go to a 4DX showing of the Mutant Turtles?
I live in San Diego now, Scott.
Oh, thanks. I thought you were still in L.A.
With my life.
All right.
Nope, thanks for tracking everything.
San Diego's a southern
What's
suburb.
What's the difference?
That's fine. And second of all, I would do this. I would do it once. Yeah. I'm an early adopter enough to do this once, but I don't think it's required. And
I'll wear a poncho.
Yeah, sure. The fun thing about like California Adventure, when they do this on theme rides, or like when you take the Indiana Jones at Disneyland and they shoot air at your ankles and it feels like rats are running around in the Jeep or whatever.
Sure.
The fun thing is it's so unique to that experience. It's hard to imagine like a generic one that works for all movies or whatever. Like it's hard to imagine something that would actually work if it's not designed specifically for that.
Yeah, if you're gonna watch, I don't know, a showing of that Kansas show. What's it called? The black and white one that won a bunch of
Wizard of Oz?
No, the new one. This just came out. Like a little independent thing. Can't think of it. Anyway, whatever it's called. You can't do those kind of movies.
Kansas
in here.
Buyers Club?
No, what's the one? It's all black and white. It's got your I can't think of anything. Anyway, that movie. It's in Kansas. What's it called? Black and white.
Nebraska,
not Kansas. Nebraska.
I honestly had no idea what you're talking about, and now I do.
Nebraska. Sorry. Yes, you can't. That movie. Nobody cares. Nobody's gonna have stuff blowing on your legs, or you know, water flying around, or mist, or whatever, and smoke. So I never see these things as a thing that's gonna take over movies. Generally, it's gonna be like that rumble seat thing, where it's only gonna be good if
you
have
that. That's part of it.
Well, that's true. But you're just gonna see, you know, Pacific Rim or some big Star Wars thing or something where there's lots of sound and lights and 3D and all that stuff. And then you care.
Scott, you know, at the very end, don't knock until you've tried it, because at the very end of Nebraska, when that old man is drooling and you feel the sprinkles land right on your face, it is going to be so like intense.
You
remember that for the rest of your life.
That's the thing I worry about the most with these things, and it's the dumbest little phobia. I've got a lot of dumb phobias. This one is like places like, I don't know, Rainforest Cafe, where there's water dripping everywhere. Anytime a company is spraying like liquid in my face, I always think it's like recycled poop water.
Yeah, dude. Every time. Like, or the air on a plane. Yeah,
they're not using the good stuff on me.
It's recycled
poop water.
Of course it is. And it's
water is recycled poop water.
No. Like not it's poorly recycled.
Point to Tom on that one.
Yeah, but okay, but wait.
They sent it through a Brita and then they're throwing it on my face.
Yeah.
Gay is procedure, man.
Like it was strained through a dead raccoon in some pipe. Yeah. Like
this is good enough for them.
It's not raccoon good.
Filtered water is like
Scott,
high,
you knock it
price.
Before you've tried it. But dead raccoons are actually a terrific water filter.
Of course they are. They're better than Brita as their theme.
Let's finish up this top doc quickly.
Sure.
Because we talked so much about 2048 last week, which we acknowledged was inspired by Threes.
Yeah.
Well, the Threes developers have taken to their blog to try to explain their feelings on clones and especially the popularity of 2048. They do a good job of like, we want to be happy. We think it's kind of cool, but then we kind of are upset because we put a lot of work into Threes and these things were thrown together pretty quick and we think ours is better. And then they do something pretty amazing because I was like, okay, they're trying not to be whiny and I get why they feel. They posted 45,000 words worth of emails and diagrams showing the work they went through to develop Threes in the first place. So you can see how much they did. Not only it's great for justifying how they feel about things, but it's also just really interesting to see the development process laid out like that.
Yeah.
The developers are Greg Wolwin and Asher Vollmer, and I know both of them. And they've actually made another game called Puzzle Juice, which when they released that one a couple years ago, which is a great game if you haven't played it.
Yeah,
it's
really
like a
good.
Mix of a word game. It's a terrific game. But they also released what they call the Puzzle Juice Letters. So they're also the back and forth emails on that one. And that's the first game that they worked together on. And it started as a prototype that I think it was Asher showed to Greg and he had some designs for it and went back. So yes, do read the Threes letters and then go back and check out the Puzzle Juice letters as well. And yeah, if you are ever have any interest in game development or game design or indie game design at all, they really do a lot of cool stuff in terms of like how to figure this stuff out and how to best display this to the players and how to show off how this stuff moves and how it can move and how the game works.
Because this really is cool. This is a great response. Is what really impresses me about it, because this could have just been them going, oh man, you know, they could have gone as far and extreme as a cease and desist, or they could have done some middle ground thing, which is just call everyone out on social media and hope for the best. But this is them saying, well, how about we show you what it takes to come up with this? And, you know, the Flappy Bird guy could probably do this. You know, there's not probably as much going on there, but, you know, for a world of Flappy Bird ripoffs that are still just bloating the app stores, both Android and iOS, that are ripoffs of that game. It'd be an interesting reply to come back and say, well, look what I did to do this. This took a little bit more work and everyone else just kind of took my prior art and went for it. I like that approach quite a bit. I think that's a pretty cool way to do it.
Does this get them anything other than just sort of that vindication, satisfaction that they told their side of it to prove
probably
how much they put into it? Like, I wish they can get more than just that.
I think it's goodwill, you know? Probably, right?
Like, I mean, Threes is selling fairly well, I believe. They're doing all right with it. And it's already won a bunch of awards. I bet it'll continue to win some awards. Greg Wolwin actually worked on Ridiculous Fishing, which also had a big cloning controversy. There was a clone of Ridiculous Fishing before the game came out. And they were really worried. Lambier was really worried that the game wouldn't fly because the clone came out first. Yeah. But actually, when that game came out, Ridiculous Fishing is another terrific game if you haven't played it. And it won App of the Year from Apple and like won all these awards and did really well on the App Store and made them a bunch of money. So as much as – and it's true that, you know, they are being ripped off. This is a clone. It's not an original idea. But on the other hand, like Threes is a great game. And if people make copies of it, that doesn't make any less of a great game. And I do think that they are – I mean, I don't know that it's – lost some sales specifically, but like 2048 is another one of these clones that's out there.
Sure.
That is available to play for free online. So it's just kind of like the way games work. You just, their ideas and they mutate and there's plus ones and they just sort of grow over time.
And the best ones turn viral and it's just the way this stuff goes.
Yeah. And when I create something honesty in the post of like, we don't want to hate on these, but you know, we do get a little annoyed. And if you think like, oh, come on, you guys, that's just the way the internet works. I think the thing that really set them off, if you read through it, is when people started accusing them of ripping off 2048.
Right. Yeah.
Because 2048 got so popular because it was on GitHub and it's open source and all of this. And the Threes guys were like, okay, that's great. We actually admire a lot of the principles behind that, but we were here first. So don't accuse us of ripping them off.
Yeah.
Like,
Somebody saw one of my comics on Reddit once and then came to me and said, you stole this idea and copied it. Exactly. And it was really that dumb of an email. And all I could say was, no, I that's mine.
I feel like, yes, I did from my own brain.
Yeah.
You know, what's even worse is I posted one of Scott's comics on Reddit once and people accused me of not making that comic and I didn't, but I wanted credit for it. So
that'll happen, man.
But when you make something great, you've got to expect it to be copied. So after this, I'm going to be appearing on a show called Modern Nerd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to Modern Nerds. Pretty good, yeah. Got Flom Barrett and Scat Flamson. They're fantastic hosts.
I like Now Dweebs. One of my favorite places.
That's a good too. That is a good
Dweebs today. That's a great idea. All right. Before we get to the main stuff today, I want to tell you real quick that on sale right now, $3 off, you can get the Frog Pants University t-shirts. They are on a flat, we call it a flash sale. $3 off. That's $16, $16.99 to be exact. And you can check it out at tiny.cc/frogu. That way you can go straight to it. FROGU, the letter U. That's tiny.cc/frogu. Get yours today. $3 off. What an awesome deal.
In case you missed a look at one of the best dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Mike, you were saying?
How long is that program at Frog Pants University? How long is the MBA over there?
Well, we just got accreditation, and we're trying to hire our first professor. It's early.
Okay.
But, I was just going to point out that while science cannot claim that a Frog Pants University shirt actually makes you smarter, better looking, more attractive, and more successful, it can't hurt to try buying.
Right. It can't hurt. And what's $16 in between friends? It's fine. Go get one. It's all good. And look for us to compete pretty well in foosball is our big sport. There
oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I'm looking for
World Champions.
AAA teams.
Yeah, foosball. It's pretty good. AAA is right. So the big news of the week really is this Facebook buying Oculus VR stuff. And here's the thing, though. I feel like it came, and it came with such brunt force, this announcement, and such terrible torrent of social media explosion that I feel like it's now been months since they announced it. It's had that weird effect of feeling long in the tooth, even though we literally got the announcement, Tuesday or something?
Yeah.
Where's everyone at? Like, Mike, I'm dying to know where you're at with this whole idea of, because the initial freak out is always the initial freak out. You're going to have some of that. But now that the sort of dust has settled and people are letting it settle in, that not only does Facebook now own Oculus, and that means a bunch of money, I guess. And it also means Carmack is staying, and it all, or John Carmack, that is, who was already at Oculus before this happened. And it also means that they just hired today VR expert, forgot his name already, that was at Valve.
Yeah. Michael Ahern, I think, is his name. I'm not sure. That might be wrong.
What's your take? What do you think?
I got two things. First of all, it's interesting that you say it happened so quickly, because I also read that apparently the deal all went down even inside Oculus in like 3 days. Mm. Like, this is since GDC that they've been talking about this. It's not like a long-term thing. It's that Facebook was like, we want to buy you. And Oculus said, how much? And Facebook said, this much. And Oculus said, great. So it's like, it's interesting to say that it feels like it's been so long, because apparently, like, it's even news to them over there, according to the rumors. I'm not sure exactly how the deal
went down. That's true. Does that mean that because there was a lot of rumors flying around initially when the news hit the public, that this must be a direct response to Sony's Morpheus announcements and demos that they showed at GDC. This seems to support that this was all very last minute, maybe not spurred on directly by Sony, but that probably didn't hurt to see that they had some mainstream sort of, you know, console-ified competition in the wings that looked pretty good by all accounts. Do you think
that's interesting? Yeah. I don't know. I don't think necessarily from what I've read and from what I know, I don't think that Oculus really considers Project Morpheus to be a real competitor. Like, a couple people have said that Morpheus is really high quality. I wasn't at GDC. I didn't get a chance to use it. But from what I know, the quality is better. Now, the other thing is the components that Oculus is using, there's only a few people who make those types of components, and Sony's one of them. So these might be even closer products than we expect. Like, obviously, the Oculus Rift is not a very separate product from Sony's products, but it's really all coming from the same place anyway. So it might just be a matter of implementation rather than the actual parts that we're talking about.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say about this is that it's interesting, because Facebook, I looked through the list of acquisitions that Facebook has made once this happened. Facebook generally makes acquisitions for two reasons: for technology and for people. Like, either they want access to the technology, like they bought Instagram, they want access to like the setup, sharing all the filters and doing all that type of stuff, or they also acquired a company that scanned faces. That's why, like, when you put a picture on Facebook now, it'll tell you, you know, it'll find the faces in the pictures. So they acquired a company to do that. Or they acquire the technology for people. Like, they acquire companies for people. So, like, there are specific people that they want to hire, or they're like they bought WhatsApp because they wanted access to the entire network of WhatsApp users.
Sure.
That Oculus is not either one of those. Like Palmer Luckey is not going to do any, like he's not really anything that can help at Facebook. And he's, and John Carmack, I mean, obviously he's a coder, but he's a gamer. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a possibility, but the technology is not like something you're not going to, you know, use Oculus only on Facebook. It's going to be a product. So now Google usually buys companies to make products these days. Like that's been a trend at Google. So it's possible that Facebook is like, look, this is our first acquisition where we're going to actually create a product like Google Glass or something like that, where it's like, we're going to turn this into something that we can sell as a company. And yeah, you can use it on Facebook, but you could use it for all kinds of types of interactions.
Yeah,
so it's interesting.
Mark, where are you at with it? What do you think about the future of VR in the hands of these guys?
it's something that we're just going to have to see. I think it's a little early to make the call. Obviously, they have their strategic reasons for it. And Zuckerberg even, you know, went so far as to say that VR will be the future. And this is something they want an inside hook on. And that's what this is. It's like if they could be the ones making at least a version of something that people are going to be using relatively soon, if there is any way that they can do something to make a profit early on and incorporated into social aspects, having the technology in-house, technically in-house, is probably a good way to do that. They'll be the first ones to be in that area.
Yeah. Imagine virtual groups and rooms, the Tadpool group on Facebook, which was fairly popular. Imagine that entire group being able to sort of wander around in a virtual space, talk. Yeah,
here's what I envision. I envision you're in the middle of like a death match in Call of Duty, and you've got like a sweaty Mark Zuckerberg leans over and he's like, hey man, hey. He's like, I saw you were just browsing diapers on Amazon. Have you seen this Babies R Us deal that we've got going right now? You're like, dude, I'm trying to kill someone over
this. This is what people are fearing. So I'm going to now aim this at Tom and I'm going to say the following.
You know what's better than a million XP? A
billion XP. You want to buy up to that? So I'm going to look at Tom and ask you this, Tom, because I feel like you probably know more about most of these business moves than any of us. At least that's my impression. Here's what I'm going to say to you. I think this is their way of saying we are MySpace. If we think the world is not going to change around us, we can't just settle in and be snug in our little bug. If we have to think outside of it, we have to think of things that are different. This is definitely different. We have the cash. We can do this. And it puts us in a place where this can still be gaming focused. Instagram is still Instagram focused. I would remind everybody it's not Facebook focused at all.
Mm-hmm. True.
So they could still aim for entertainment value as being the chief thing here with these other uses, be it medical, be it business, be it whatever. And this is them hedging their bets on technologies and uses of those technologies in the future that put them ahead of other people, or at least give them an opportunity to do something other than run a freaking website until the end of time, until no one cares anymore. Tom, what do you think?
Well, first of all, it was, what was his name? Michael Abrash.
Abrash, that's it.
That Oculus acquired from Valve.
Right.
And Abrash, by the way, coded for Quake and Windows and a bunch of other AAA titles, have his code. So you've probably touched that guy's code today. That is a huge get for Oculus VR. It also shows that even though Facebook hasn't acquired Oculus yet, it's not, the deal isn't done. It's more than likely going to happen. It's pretty much done. This guy is not afraid to go do.
Plus, those two guys, specifically Carmack, they're not afraid to tell you what's up. Like they're not; these aren't guys that are going to sit around and get jerked around. He didn't like how he was getting jerked around at his own company at id Software. That's why he left to do this. So the fact that he's not making a stink about it is a good thing for skeptical gamers. That these two guys who've worked together before, who know each other, and are considered geniuses in their field. Them being there is a huge get for them, but also a big sign that they're taking this seriously, that this isn't just let's make it a thing to view Facebook through or something or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the knee jerk reaction is going to think the Facebook I know right now, or think I know because I don't use it that much, maybe, is going to be what they're putting this thing they've just bought in. And you pointed out Instagram, everybody freaked out because it seemed obvious they were just going to pull Instagram apart for parts and make it Facebook photos. And they did not do that. And so I think you're right. What Facebook's doing is creating a conglomerate. They're creating something that's like, hey, we know Facebook won't last forever as the platform. So we need to figure out how to think ahead of where the company will go in the future. WhatsApp is part of that. It's going to help them with connectivity in parts of the world where people don't have enough bandwidth to use a full Facebook. They're doing all kinds of things with Facebook for Everyone, which is an ability to get Facebook content on a phone that doesn't have smartphone connection, doesn't have big internet connections. And today they announced that they have acquired this company called Ascenta that worked on the Breitling Orbiter and worked on the Zephyr drone. And they intend to use it to provide internet connectivity to parts of the world that don't have internet by drone as well as satellite. Interesting part of that announcement is the Facebook mission, which Zuckerberg told analysts and investors, is to connect everyone, understand the world, and build the knowledge economy. So what they're doing with Oculus VR is they're trying to build that knowledge economy. They're getting ready for the next platform. They don't want to get caught out like they did with mobile and have to scramble to catch up. They're putting a bet on VR as being a place to go. They don't know what they're going to do with Oculus VR. All they know is that's going to be a platform that a lot of people are going to be on, and we want to be very closely involved with that platform so that we can bring our products, WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook itself over there. And more importantly, all the monetization that we're learning with different ways of monetization. WhatsApp is different than Instagram is different than Facebook can be applied to that new platform. Mm. I mean, if you're thinking about this as Mark Zuckerberg just wants to steal my private information from Oculus, you're thinking way too small. Zuckerberg's thinking much farther down the road than
you. Of course he is.
He wants to steal way more than your private information.
Oh, yeah. He wants your soul.
You make a good point.
So what about the Minecraft guy backing out of working with them?
Yeah, Notch. So this is really interesting. Notch put out a letter very quickly and said, the one line that stuck out to me was,
You say letter, that was a tweet.
It was a tweet, but he blog posted. Yeah, you're right. Blog posted it later. And in the blog post, he specifically said these words. He said, I didn't pitch in 10 grand to help seed a company for Facebook to buy. And that set a lot of people off in support of Notch, saying, yeah, man, yeah, stick it to the man. These guys were a small startup, and look where they went. What happened to all the money we gave them? Now look at them, blah, blah, blah. And it's fine. Notch is a smart dude, and it's his product. He should be able to do what he wants with this. He wants to pull it. That's fine. I think that was a big deal, but yeah, sure, he can pull it. But I think this weird notion about what Facebook is or isn't is an odd conversation. Like this whole... if you put money into that thing and you expected to be a shareholder that would then get dividends down the road, which is what his statement and others saying this have implied, you're smoking the special brand of crack, because that's not how it works. It never worked that way. And you're told numerous times in numerous ways on the Kickstarter page that you are not a investor. That is not what this is. So that whole flack and overload over the week kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, really? We're talking about this?
Oh, but it's so not surprising to me, because even though you're right, you're 100% right, Scott, you're saying that everyone should have acted rationally.
Oh, is that what I'm saying? Well, they make a good point then.
Kind of what you're saying. Well, and also, I think we all thought of Kickstarter as helping the little guy, even though it's not always been true. Like, there have been other companies that have been bought up. It's the fact that Facebook bought Oculus. And Oculus was a poster child for the little guy who had an innovative idea, making it big. And then it's almost like the worst possible scenario to some people that, well, getting bought by Microsoft would have been better than this, right? It's like, it's Facebook, the evil empire. And whatever it is, and Marcus Persson is one of those guys who thinks, like, Facebook creeps me out. Founder of WhatsApp felt that way about Facebook. Somehow they got to him. I don't know what Zuckerberg's magic is. I don't know if he's able to explain, like, no, this is what I'm really up to. Let me show you. And they get it. But he's convincing some very credible people to join up with him.
Yeah.
And I like Notch. Notch is great. But let's be honest. If the Oculus Rift is as big as Oculus hopes it will eventually be, and there's one or two of these or three of these in every household around the world, you better believe Minecraft is eventually going to be running on it.
Yeah, so. That's a good point.
If this takes off, now that's a big if, because look at like 3D TV, for example. That's something that everyone thought, oh, well, of course, everyone's going to have 3D TVs. And that never panned a way out. And I do think VR is very impressive, and I think it's getting better and better, but you don't know if this stuff's going to pan out. But let's be honest, like I said, Minecraft needs to run on every device out there in the world. And if the Oculus Rift is the device everyone's using, I don't know that Notch will have too many problems changing his tune.
Yeah, he'll acquiesce. I just feel like the whole thing was just overblown. I'm like, you guys, you need to just go back and read your Facebook agreement so you know what you're doing here, because then you shouldn't be investing / putting money toward this thing. If you
Facebook agreement, you mean your Kickstarter?
Your Kickstarter. What did I say? Facebook. I meant Kickstarter. Yeah, yeah. You probably should look at that too. Because
you definitely should look at that one.
The people that paid Oculus over the Kickstarter, like, okay, I guess there were a couple levels at the bottom where they got a nice thank you, but they got what they paid for. Like, they've delivered all their headsets. They've done everything that they've been asked to do.
But people are still saying
that whatever you back, those people still own and can do whatever they want with it.
Of course. That's the deal. And how people think, like some of these guys who I heard this on Will Smith's Tested podcast. He said there were people saying, I gave $25. Where's my $2,800 back or whatever? It's like, are you kidding me? Really? You're going to be talking this way? Now, look, Tom's right about the irrationality of the internet, and I need to quit getting so worked up about it, but it irritates me to no end. And like, that kind of talk is just ridiculous. And I guess since they're anonymous and nobody cares, we can say whatever we want. So I'm going to say here, Mark's bag's a douche. There you go, Mark. Take that. Woo-hoo! What are you going to do with it?
Wow.
That would be, cool.
Shots fired.
I'm going
to say, in the defense of the douchebags, right. I'm going to say that Kickstarter and companies like Oculus very much do try to cultivate the idea that you are backing somebody who could never make it otherwise. And it's, you know, and it's all kind of a, we're in this together.
It's in their best interest.
It's not about money.
Sure.
And so when they go and they sell for $2 billion to Facebook, a bunch of people who are like, wait a minute, you all were telling me it wasn't about the money and you just cashed in. I think I get a little bit of the reaction.
I agree. And maybe it's poo-poo on Kickstarter for taking advantage of the naivete of people. Because people are being naive if they believe those things. If you didn't think Oculus's big plan was to get a ton of money one way or the other, either through, I mean, nobody seemed to raise an eyebrow when they got extra funding last year that was outside the Kickstarter.
$95 million?
Yeah, almost $100 million. Nobody seemed to care about that, but now they all care. Because it wasn't Facebook, exactly. Yeah. And I would just seal this deal with this comment right here. If Valve was the one buying this, nobody would be talking about it in this way. It is purely people's perception, real or not, of Facebook. That's what caused the consternation and the freak out. Mm-hmm. It's money, good money either way for Oculus. So
I like that post.
Yes. Pretty good, right? Too bad it's more than 140 characters. All right. Let's move on to our pop quiz. Before we do, a reminder, nerdtacular.com tickets are available now. They're selling fast. So if you want to get yours and come to this great event, many of the people on the show are going to be there. Maybe even Mike. Last year you were there. Maybe you'll be there again. We don't know. Maybe.
I don't know when it is, but maybe. I'll give you a maybe.
Yeah, well,
you got to go, Mike.
So who knows? He was there last year, which was awesome. It was always good to see him.
Yeah, it was super fun. It was great. You should definitely. I highly recommend everyone go whether I'm there or not.
Yeah.
if panels are going to be amazing.
They are, right? Tom has a special hand in that this year. And
I have a hand waving in that. I mean, Steven Schleicher and Nicole Spagnuolo, Mark's wife, have outdone themselves booking these panels. This is going to be the best Nerdtacular ever. So if you've ever thought, I kind of want to go buy those tickets right now.
We're going to have so much fun. Details at nerdtacular.com. Tickets available now. Links to all of that are there. And I would love to see each and every one of you there. Shake your hands, hang out, do what we got to do.
America scores and wins.
All right. It is time for the fabled current Geek Pop quiz. Rapid fire style questions about trivia you guys should know about. We're going to start with Mark's bag.
Oh boy.
And
I was warned about this, but I don't even know what it is.
That's all right. You're going to answer the best way you can. Tom keeps score in a very weird way.
You always say that.
So be prepared for that. And here's how we go. We're just going to go. And you don't have much time to think about it because that'll start negatively affecting your score. So you answer the best way you can, the fastest you can. Mark, are you ready?
I guess so.
All right, here we go. First question in your wood trivia, by the way, because you're the wood whisperer.
Hey-o.
Wood trivia. Okay. Number one, what tree is generally targeted by the bark beetle?
Elm?
Let me find out if you're right. Hold on, I skipped around here. That is incorrect. It's pine. Pine is the correct answer.
Where were you on? Come on, wood whisperer.
I'm not even going to complain because Tom will dock me some points already. So
yes, he will.
You're actually going to get a point for recognizing that fact.
Okay, good.
Now let's move on to what type of wood is the least suitable for staining?
In my world, poplar.
Oh my gosh. There we go. Correct answer. It is poplar.
We all live
wood.
In the same world. Nice yeah. job.
It's a subjective thing. But
it
anyway,
is.
Go ahead.
Right. But you got it right. What is the weakest type of joint in woodworking?
A butt joint.
That is correct. Butt joint is the correct Ooh. Answer. So far, so good, man.
Tommy, it's like I almost it's almost like I do this for a living.
I know. What should you never use as a push stick?
Tom's hand.
We're going to give it to you. It's your fingers.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's actually four an extra half point for specifying my hand.
For taking care of Tom.
Not damaging Tom anymore. Yeah,
good job. All right, next up, what is a hook angle? A hook angle.
A hook angle?
Uh-huh.
It's an angle on which a hook is applied.
Let's see.
It's the angle of a blade, a tooth on a blade.
Oh, damn, you got it. All right, nice job. You fixed it at the end.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to give you a half point because you started by just rearranging the words of the question.
Yeah, I was trying to be funny and it just wasn't working.
Didn't work
so
as well.
So I figured I'd tell the truth.
All right, fine. Next up, let's see. What does MDF stand for?
Medium density fiberboard.
Let's take a look. You are correct. Wow. Nicely done. Second to last question. What are two of the most popular types of woods of people look to get in their quarter sawn variety?
White oak.
Uh-huh.
And sycamore?
Got half right. Oak and maple.
Quarter sawn maple?
So it's like this. There you go.
Dang I'm going it. To contest that. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, and your appeal has been heard. Full point.
Wow. See, I told you. It's weird. It's weird.
Fast appeal process.
Next and final question. What does proud mean?
A surface is higher than another surface?
We're going to give it to you. It's protruding.
You better give it to me because I'm right.
That's the effect of it.
Wait, did you ask what proud means?
No, proud, P-R-O-U-N-D.
Oh, proud. Okay, good. Yeah. Then he gets a point.
It's a word I've never heard of.
I was going to say, that's not what proud, I mean, proud means like you're happy about something.
Yeah,
proud is
Mark
after this quiz.
That's right.
Hey, you.
All right, nicely done. Tom will give you your score at the end of this. It is now Mike Schramm's turn. It is video game trivia time.
All right.
I don't know as much about wood.
Yeah, yeah. But right. I know a little bit about video games.
You do. You've played a few. So here you go. Number one question. Mario first appeared in Donkey Kong. What was his? What was he referred to in the game of Donkey Kong?
The plumber.
You are incorrect. It was Jumpman. Jumpman.
Oh, it is Jumpman.
Yeah. Number two. What game introduced the Konami code?
Contra?
Gradius is the correct answer.
Yeah.
Gradius, nice job.
Everyone thinks it's Contra because it popularized it.
After losing the boxing world title, Nintendo changed Mike Tyson's Punch-Out to just Punch-Out. Who replaced Mike Tyson as the final boss in this version?
It was not Glass Joe because he was the first boss.
Right.
It was Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Mr. Dream is the correct answer.
All right.
Oh, you're so going to lose the for three wrong in a row.
Yeah. His answer, though, was the one I wish was true, but... not true. All right, next up.
Fishes, horses, Scott.
Well, I know, right? What game featured in a variety? I'm sorry, in a very early issue of Nintendo Power caused hundreds of parents to complain to Nintendo the magazine cover gave their kids nightmares? I remember this. I would get this one right.
I'm trying to think of a funny answer now because I can't think of the right answer. Bubble Bobble.
You are incorrect. Castlevania 2 is the proper answer.
Half really? Point for honesty, though.
See? See, it's weird. I told you. Which enemy in The Legend of Zelda dislikes smoke?
The cigarette-smoking man.
Incorrect. Dodongo. And for the record, the cigarette-smoking man really enjoys smoke.
That's true. That's fair. You're right.
Third to last answer.
Half point for that.
Right. Which character in Star Fox tells you to do a barrel roll?
It's the frog.
You
the
are
frog in Star Fox.
You are incorrect. The actual answer is Pepe the Hare. It is not Slippy it is not Slippy the Toad like a lot of people think, including me.
All right, guys, thanks very much. I'm a video game analyst.
We got two more, and then we'll see.
Oh, there's more. Go
ahead. You're gonna make it up for these two. What game did Nintendo reskin into Super Mario Brothers 2?
Gianna Sisters?
Doki Doki Panic is the correct answer. Finally.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is
now,
true.
Here we go. Let's see if I can shut them all out all
right.
the way.
Last one. What gun listed in the manual in GoldenEye was replaced by the Klob in the final game? And I should give you a hint. These manuals are printed early and they didn't change them and a lot of gamers were confused.
The only thing I know about the Klob is that every time I use it, I go, It's clobbering time.
Oh, jeez. Give him a point for that.
Thank you very much.
We'll have to wait till you rule on the answer.
Yeah.
What are you Tech 9.
All right. The Tech 9. That is incorrect. The Spider.
But he does get 1.5 points for the clobbering time.
Thank you very much for the pun.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. All right. So
which one was it? What was it?
It was the Spider. S-P-Y-D-E-R. The Spider was in the final game.
Has anyone ever gotten, in the history of this entire show, zero answers correct?
Nope. I think you're the first. I think you're the one.
I'm the winner.
No, so Tom,
straight to the Robo-Olympics.
Tom, how'd they do? How'd it go?
Mike did end up with 1 point because, hey, it's clobber time. And Mark finished with 8.
Wow. That's a perfect score almost.
Well,
there's 8 questions, but you got extras for doing other things. Nicely done, everybody. That's what we call quiz time.
Good game.
That was good. Good game, everybody. Tramp, brush up for next year, will you?
I need a Price is Right theme, but we can't actually afford the Price is Right theme.
You're right about that.
Put this one in there.
It's expensive. All right, moving on to this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's time for Forecast. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment. And I have one, and I want people to talk about it. And I think it's actually, I read it now, and I think, man, this is kind of dumb, Scott, but I kind of wish it was a thing that could happen. So here it is. Sometime in the next couple of years, major sites, YouTube, I'm trying to think of others. I can't right now.
Twitch,
others, will decide to kill comments for good. Polygon. Yeah, there's lots of sites, right? Like all the big networks, blogs, everybody. They will kill comments for good, decide not to have them at all, or there'll be a new technology that will let us more simply not see them based on our preferences that is less of a list where you're hitting checkboxes, something more revolutionary than that. My more likely scenario is more and more major outlets stop letting comments happen.
Well, this is on the heels of Copybloggers' announcement recently, correct?
Yeah, yes. That's kind of what got me thinking about it. Tell people what the kind of the gist of that.
Well, I don't know all the details on it other than the fact that they just kind of decided to turn them off because they gave a list of reasons, if I recall, and some of those were that a lot of the engagement and the conversations already happening in other places like Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
Also that if you know, as people who try to teach you how to make the most of your online writing, that if you're going to put that much thought into a comment, which a lot of people do, they're saying do it on your own space. Do it in a place where you get credit for it and it counts for your website.
Sure. And this is also kind of on the heels of the Popular Science blog site thing, not doing comments anymore, which we talked about on this show before. I just feel like these moves and those are good reasons. Like none of the ones you just mentioned, I know there's more to what they posted, but that's all reasonable stuff. Because if you feel like it's either polluting your content or making it harder, or it's an extra feature that you have to support and maintain and keep spam out of and all that kind of stuff. Is it really worth it in the end? What are we actually gaining from that engagement when there are so many other outlets for this engagement?
My guess is that it was the moderation was the really largest factor. I don't necessarily believe it's all about, we want you to take, you know, your writing and put it in your own space. That's a nice thing to say. I think really it was a lot of work to maintain it. And honestly, I mean, maybe somebody knows more statistics on this than I do, but from my experience, the vast majority of people are reading, watching the content, and then leaving. It's a smaller percentage that actually participate in those comments anyway. So you're doing all this work for what really amounts to a small group of people.
Yep.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's true. And I have seen the numbers, like on Joystick and TUAW, when we had comments down there, it was a very small percentage of people that actually were involved in the comment section. When you looked at the unique page views versus the amount of comments that were showing up, it was like single digit percentages of people actually talking down there.
Yeah. Right.
It kind of depends on whatever site you're trying to have. I think there are sites that do it well. Slashdot is well known for its comment moderation system. Reddit, I think, does a great job lately of comment moderation. And like the idea is, it also depends on what you want of the comments. If you just want people to engage with your content, for example, on most blogs, I think that's the case. Having whatever kind of comment system you want just lets people leave whatever thoughts that they want in there. If you want to turn comments into content themselves, like Reddit, which essentially like half of Reddit is just reading comments and seeing what people have to say about stuff, then obviously moderation becomes a real priority and you need to make sure that it's like all signal. And
well, because it is your product at that point.
It's essentially half your product on Reddit. And if you include submitted links as comments, then yeah, it's essentially what you're talking about.
Yeah. Tom?
It's almost like you're saying that there's a technology out there that maybe every site doesn't have to use just because it exists.
Yeah. That is because
I think that's what happened with commenting, right? Commenting in 1998 was this amazing thing. Like, we can put talk back on our ZDNet articles and hear what the people have to say.
Yeah.
And then it became the rage web 2.0 and social media. And we're going to have commenting and we're going to create our own mini social networks. And everybody that I'm not even criticizing that. Everybody had to try it and see whether it worked for them or not. I think what's weird is when people say, well, it's the internet. I've got to have comments.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Yeah, what you have to have is a reason to use all different kinds of commenting. I think it's really interesting to watch what the Gawker Media folks have been doing, like at IO9. It's interesting to watch what Condé Nast has been doing with it, especially at Ars Technica, where they're like, they're not just turning off comments. And maybe turning off comments is right for popular science. I don't know. Maybe that is what they should do. But these other publications are saying, well, no, we want comments, but it is a small percentage. And what effect does it really have? And how do we make the best use? And how do we actually turn it into like really useful conversations that help us understand the stories better and help anybody who wants to look at it understand the stories better? If you want to do that, that's what you should do. It's comments isn't an on or off sort of thing. It's what you want to get out of it. It's another tool, and there are lots of different ways to do it.
Yeah,
and
everyone's it's a very just, reasonable way of looking at it, Tom. Thank you very much.
It really is. And here's the thing. That's what you provide. The rest of us are emotionaling out on this stuff, or at least I do, and Tom always puts us back on center. But like, I'm considering dropping comments from the comic blog, finally. And the reason I'm doing it is not actually because of cost of comments. I've got a good community. People are generally pretty good in there. It's not that, and I like the way they interact. It's that spammers are killing me, and most spam blockers just aren't doing the job.
So
I don't want to, man, it's another job I have to worry about where I know I could engage with these people in my own forums on Twitter and Facebook and other places where they're already kind of engaging with me anyway. But there's still this piece of me that's afraid to get rid of it because I feel like, well, if I get rid of it, then what? Then what? You know,
there's a sort of public perception about it that if you're doing it, you don't want to engage. There will be a certain group of people who will automatically assume that that's the reason you're doing it.
Yeah. And that's true. It might just be one dude.
To defend comments a little bit, like I started out on WoW Insider, writing for WoW Insider back in the day because I was a commenter. Like I left comments and I said, hey, I've been commenting on the site and I'd really like to write for you guys. And that's kind of how I got that job. So there are good reasons to have them around. And obviously it's a good way to engage with the community that wants to engage. The other thing, like Tom said, the reason everyone has them is because they're the cheapest form of content you can come across. If you want to pay someone like Scott to make great video content, you got to pay a lot of money. If you want to pay someone to write for you, you got to pay them a lot of money. If you just want to put up a comment for and let comments roll in, that costs you $0. So that's one reason why they're so, you know, they're so leaned upon, because I could just run advertising next to the comments and make, you know, a few cents, and it's worth it for me. So.
Yeah. Mark's right. Someone will get censorship, but whatever.
At least in WordPress, when you make it so that someone has to be an approved commenter before they can comment without approval, and combine that with a Kismet, the spam goes way down.
Yeah, that's true.
Tom, that's the exact setup I use, and spam just maybe one or two slip in a day.
Yeah, every once in a while something's going to get back past the gate. But
yeah, and I flag them and that's it. But you know, for me, spam under control in my own environment on my website, and yeah, it's woodworking and people can still be jerks there too.
Sure.
My website is actually really good about that. I look forward to the comments I get on my website. In other environments, let's say each one's a little bit different. Facebook, I really like the engagement there. YouTube is one of the banes of my existence, is dealing with people on YouTube. And there are good people there, but there's just a lot of jackasses there that I feel it's my responsibility to deal with because it's living under my content. So I feel responsible for it.
Plus they're wandering masses who can just accidentally step in your yard, say something dumb, and then move on to the next house.
Exactly.
It's a really odd place, that whole thing. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I just think you're going to see a shift in the way people think about it in the next couple of years. Yes.
I just had an idea.
Yeah.
Hamburger would be hard to 3D print, but spam seems very easy to squeeze into.
If you think about it, spam is already kind of analog 3D printed anyway.
There you go.
Hormel should get in on this now.
It's kind of just squeezed right in. So maybe that could work in a 3D printer. I'm sorry, were we talking about comments? Go ahead.
Does Hormel own
off
spam?
Off topic, I'm moderating you.
Does Hormel make spam?
They do, yeah. I think so.
Okay. Great.
Don't they?
Are they irritated that email and things are all referred to their products? I guess there was a whole big thing
when I was at Tech TV, I think. So it must have been around 02 or 03 where Hormel was thinking about trying to trademark it and stop people from using that. And then they just gave up. Yeah. Because like,
you either like that crappy meat concoction or you don't. That's just the way it is.
Don't you insult my spam.
It's all right with an egg and if you fry it, it's okay.
Or put it on some rice, a little masubi.
Masubi.
Hey, what the heck? That sounds great right now.
It's Los Angeles out here. That's what we have out here.
I tell you, you guys live on that stuff. It's like air. Speaking of air, we're going to get out of here. We're going to err on the side of getting out of here and ending the show. I'm hugely grateful for our guest today. You guys were fantastic, as I knew you would be. Smart guys, smart topics, smart stuff to talk about. Let's tell people real quick where they can find you. Let's start with Mark. Mark, what? Where in the world can people find Mark Spagnuolo?
At woodwhisperer.com. This is my primary website. If you want to learn about woodworking, come see me there. Got a lot of great free videos, and we'll teach you how to build furniture. Woodwhisperer on Twitter.
Yeah, the original 3D printer in wood, Mark Spagnuolo.
Yes, I do exist in 3D.
It's fantastic. Mike Schramm, what about you? Where can they go?
I've been very private lately because all my work has been offline and I haven't done any podcasts. So thank you very much for having me on. This is super fun. I haven't podcasted in a little while and I have to get back into it. Yeah, but you can definitely follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mike Schramm, which is MikeSchramm. And I work at EDAR. We're a design firm that does game evaluations and we're hiring. So if you want to be a video game analyst and you know more than I do about video game trivia, please send us your resume and we'll check it out.
That's awesome.
Can I just leave comments?
Just leave a comment.
Rude ones.
It's all spam. So
can you,
by that I mean
send
you get,
some potted meat products to Mike's
get a
inbox.
Piece of spam just right there.
So. Mark, can you make an ASCII penis? Because you're in if you can do that.
I'll do my best. I'll start working.
Get on that. Tom Merritt, anything else? What else, man?
I just want to thank Kimberly Strait for sending us that really nice note. She just sent us a really lovely, I love your show. I'm glad you discovered it. It's always nice to get those notes.
Oh,
thanks.
I forgot to read that email. You're right. I didn't mean to skip past that.
No, that's it.
It's a nice little thank you email. And that was great. Kimberly Strait, we're thinking of you as we get out of here.
Except for Scott, who forgot to read.
Our theme today, produced and made by Andrew Allen. We love his music. Keep that stuff up, Andrew. And he's got a cool Kickstarter live right now. You can actually go support. He's doing Marvel and DC music jazz covers. And I'm doing some artwork for it. And it's
take that,
great.
Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, take that, you guys. What are you going to do about that? You can find us on Twitter at Current Geek, at Scott Johnson, at Ace Detect. Our subreddit is currentgeek.reddit.com. Oh, gosh, what else? Why is that playing? Hold on. Sorry, that wasn't supposed to play. This is supposed to be there. Okay, anyway, currentgeek.reddit.com, currentgeek@gmail.com is our email address. And at currentgeek.com, you can sub to the show, check out show notes from previous episodes, and all that good stuff. It's going to do it for us. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time.